Even if everyone made it across without injury, it would take 5 times as long as crossing solid ground. But he hadn't counted on the people of the pocket. They moved ahead of the body of troops. As Dante watched, a ribbon of loose rock seemed to melt before them. The people advanced along it, smoothing the ground as they went. Dante jogged behind them and stepped on the ribbon. It was hard, solid rock, 15 feet across and seamless, sturdier than the finest Norran road. He laughed out loud. Rogue glanced over her shoulder. I assume you'll have no complaints if I take the lead. Dante bowed. By all means. She gestured her people onward. The road materialized before them. When one woman tired, another moved forward to take her place. In this fashion, they were able to maintain a middling walking speed. The soldiers and beasts piled in behind them. The entire group crossed the field in minutes. At a snowfield, Dante retook the lead. As he marched through the crunching ice, he became lost in the dream of connecting Narashtivik to Tornin, Galador, the Norran territories, and everything that had once made up Eastern Gask with a perfect network of roads. Travel times could be cut in half. Such an effort would take him years by himself, but the people of the pocket could accomplish it in a season, and Selin could do it in an instant. Logically, it would be better to extend his life and spend part of it uniting his allies with Rhodes than to burn Selin in such a manner, but the potential was what sent his mind spinning. He could build aqueducts down from these very mountains, expand Narashtivik's underground sewers across the whole city, clear miles of fields for farming. He was certain Ro would take her people back to Pocket Cove the instant this was finished, but there was nothing to stop him from training others to move the earth, was there? With just 12 monks working every day, he could revolutionize the lives of 10s of thousands. But that was for the future. In the present, he had to deal with the minister. He withdrew from such fancies to keep watch on the forests and the ridges. A single Kappa attack or avalanche could ruin everything. Throughout the day, the people of the pocket cut a swath across and through a series of screes and cliffs. By the end of the day, they were closer to their destination than to Saul. The scouts pointed the war party to a pine forest protected on one side by a cliff. There, for the final act of the day, the people conjured a semicircle of 20-foot walls, enclosing more than enough space to house the whole camp with room for latrines. They quickly strung up tents and erected yurts. Men hacked down branches and cleared the ground. In a blink, fires blazed. The camp was filled with the smell of smoke and roasting meat. Dante found Ast warming himself by one of the fires. How far are we? Ast looked to the east, but the blank wall blocked his sightline. We could only have moved faster if we'd flown. We should be at the site by noon tomorrow. It took Dante some time to get to sleep. He was too busy envisioning the next day. When he got up, the only lights were the coals of the fires and the stars overhead. He moved along the walls and checked with the soldiers watching the darkness. None had seen or heard any sign of Kappas. They ate and packed their shelters. The people pulled down a section of the wall, and the procession moved on. The day began dazzling and sunny. But by late morning, a carpet of cloud muffled the sky. The world seemed to dim. Dante was staring up at it, trying to gauge whether it was about to snow, when Ast announced they'd arrived. The site he'd chosen to begin the tunnel was on a stretch of level ground. A series of steep rises hung above it, followed by countless miles of snowfields, ravines, and glaciers. It was a good site, and Dante said as much. While the scouts dispersed to make sure the area was as desolate as it looked, The troops went about gathering wood from the surrounding pine forest. The crack of axes filled the day. Roe approached the rocks and got to work. The first step, which would go on to consume the remainder of the first day, was devoted to hollowing out the staging area, the huge caverns in which everyone, including the animals, would shelter and wait while the people of the pocket worked on the tunnel. Because, as it turned out, there were a few minor logistical issues with gouging a hole through scores of miles of mountains while simultaneously attempting to pass a small army through that hole. The people of the pocket's timetable was aggressive, but it was still going to take multiple days to craft the passage. Even if they were somehow able to conjure the entire tunnel instantaneously, the distance between them and the other end was going to be something like 80 miles, possibly longer. The troops would have to rest and sleep more than once to get through it. Yet making the tunnel wide enough for them to rest at any point along the way would slow the people down tremendously. Every foot they cleared to the side was one foot they could have spent moving forward. Instead, he and Roe worked out another option. Rather than a spacious tunnel of uniform width, they'd keep it as tight as reasonably possible. But there would be two giant caverns built into it, one here at the start and one in the middle, reachable on a full day's march. A second day of travel would see the army out the other side. Smaller caverns, roughly the size of a large room, would augment the tunnel every 10 miles, allowing space for those who needed it to rest mid-march without clogging the passage. The rock before Roe melted inward, flowing away in a potent, heatless rush. Two women stood beside her, casting an ethereal light into the growing space. Though Dante doubted Roe needed illumination. He expected she could operate entirely by feel. The cavern was soon wide enough to walk into. As Roe continued to expand it straight back, others moved in to open its sides. "We're sure the whole mountain's not about to fall down," Blaze said. "They know what they're doing," Dante said. "They'll feel it if it starts to get... collapsy. Well, just a friendly reminder that I'll be sleeping in there. I have a secret vulnerability to being crushed by thousands of tons of rock. At least it would be over fast." Dante walked into the cave and let his mind move into the rock. As the open space grew and grew, he felt the faintest tremor in the nether. After discussing it with Roe, they decided to amend the chamber to include a number of pillars, just in case. Dante handled these, fighting the urge to make every curve and surface smooth. It didn't have to be perfect. It just had to keep the snow and the mountain off their heads. He went outside for a break and saw that many of the soldiers were watching the cave in awe. Pale lights flashed between the pillars as strange women reshaped the Woduns with mere thought. Dante stopped to watch too. Their guesses as to how big the cavern would need to be were just that, guesses. And as they neared completion, they brought in a few dozen of the troops and mounts to see whether the space was sufficient. Men lugged in firewood and supplies, while some of the women of the pocket installed fire pits, chimneys, ventilation shafts, and downward-sloping latrines in the outer wall. With so many people, the process moved at incredible speed. The cavern was complete by mid-afternoon. The people of the pocket moved their efforts to the tunnel itself, boring an 8-foot-wide passage into the inner wall, working two at a time, while two more followed with compasses and plumbs to ensure the passage was kept reasonably straight and level. Dante volunteered to help and was added to the queue of women. Their talent varied wildly. Some were only able to carve out 100 feet of tunnel before tiring, while others walked for a quarter mile, rock dissolving before them the whole way, until at last they smiled faintly and stepped back, allowing the next to take their place. It was impossible to tell exactly how far they progressed, but Dante thought they'd made it at least 5 miles through the mountains before their strength was spent. By the time he got back to the main chamber, many of the women and some of the troops were asleep. Fires burned in the pits, heating and lighting the front of the cave. There was a bit of smoke, but most of it channeled up the flues built into the wall. Ro was among the last to return from the tunnel. Dante went to greet her.
"This is incredible. We're moving much faster than I expected."
"It will slow as we get deeper." Her voice creaked with exhaustion. "But thank you. Now, where's dinner?"
The last thing they did before nightfall was shrink the outside entrance to the exact size where a man could get through it, but a Kappa couldn't.
Thus protected, they screened it with tarps to keep out the cold. Dante found Blaze and Min eating dinner.
"Exciting, isn't it?"
"I've lived with these people for years," Min said, "and I've never seen anything like it."
Blaze rolled his eyes. "Let's not pat ourselves on the back so hard that we're too worn out to drill our magical tunnel."
"Thank you for bringing them."
Dante smiled and went to bed. When he woke, his first sensation was the smell. The cavern was rank with the dung and urine of horses and mules, the sweat of men, too. He peeked through the entrance. The troops and beasts had trampled the snow, but the Kappa tracks were unmistakable. He went for his sword, widened the opening, and stood vigil with the other members of the council while the soldiers went to stretch their legs and exercise the animals. The women were already at work on the tunnel. He heard the first of them had risen at midnight. As the tunnel lengthened, he understood why Ro had thought their progress would slow down. It was a long ways for them to walk, and growing longer by the moment. But while the tunnel was much warmer than outside, it was still chillier than the main cavern, not to mention cramped and featureless. He thought about suggesting they create 2 additional great halls along the way instead of one, but the people worked on, tireless, uncomplaining. When his turn neared, he started down the tunnel, walking by the light of his torchstone, then the nether. With his breathing and footsteps echoing off the close walls, it took him 3 hours to reach its end. The day after that, it took him 30 minutes to reach its terminus. There would be no going back to the Great Hall that night. At multiple points along the walk, he'd heard the trickle of water and felt drafts of cold, fresh air. The people, noticing the staleness, had driven ventilation shafts up to the surface. They finished shaping the second sleeping hall and continued on. That night was his most miserable. The chamber had no fireplaces, poor lighting, and little company besides the women, who very well might have been on orders to minimize their contact with him, given their standoffishness. He spent the night tired and alone. He felt better as soon as he got back to work on the tunnel. With no sunlight or any other markers of the passage of time, the day entered a compressed, trance-like state. As soon as his hold on the nether grew weak, the annoyance and dissatisfaction of non-work swelled inside him. He loomed Knack to send word to Somba and the troops. It was time for them to move. To stave off his moodiness, Dante hung around the ever-advancing end of the tunnel. The women were deathly serious at times, appearing as incapable of joking as they would be of pulling a stump out with their teeth. But when they were alone, together, they made fun like anyone else. That night, he stayed with them in one of the sub-chambers they'd built along the tunnel. He put in his work, then backtracked all the way to the second hall, where the troops had arrived the night before. Some of them looked a little rattled, and Thanoran appeared less than pleased to be stuck underground in tunnels that felt even smaller to them, but there were no signs of panic. Dante let them know that they should be on the move by the next morning. Not that he knew when morning was. He hadn't seen sunlight in days. Even his sleep schedule had become haphazard. To refresh the nether faster and to pass the time, he was getting much more of it, curling up in his blankets whenever he thought he might be able to nod off. His lack of time sense was why it came as such a surprise when, many hours later, as he stood at the end of the tunnel waiting for his turn, a blade of sunshine slashed through the curtain of stone. A wave of frozen air came with it. He looked out on Wesley. Chapter 38. Everything about it felt different. The air, the temperature, the light. Even the ground somehow felt like a foreign country. He couldn't explain how, exactly. But for the first time since crossing from Malin into Garsk, he was looking on someplace new. Even if that newness was a barren, rocky snowfield, it was pretty damned exciting. A scout came to spell him on the ridge, informing him that the people were readying to depart. Blaze jogged back across the hills. The flat spot outside the tunnel was filled with a melange of men, Norren, mules, and horses. The people of the pocket were gathered in a loose cluster by the passage's entrance. Dante was there, too. On seeing Blaze, he smiled and went to confer with Roe. "I know you said this wasn't about debts," Dante said. "But if there is anything that I, the council, or the city of Narashtovic can do for you or your people, we're yours to command." Roe gazed to the east. "Just remember why you're here." That sounded a tad ominous, but also like one of those things Blaze wasn't privy to because he was no longer the hammer hanging from the great Dante's belt. He decided to let the important people worry about it. Instead, he found Min and grinned. "Been out for a walk yet? It's like another country." "Not yet," she smiled wanly. "And I don't think I'll get to." "Why?" His grin fell to earth like a pigeon with a heart attack. "You're going back with them?" "I'm not sure what use I'd be here. They're still my people. I think it's time to rejoin them." "Well, is there a reason for me to stay?" He gazed up at the western peaks. He could have fabricated any number of excuses to keep her around, including a few that might be halfway true. But the fact was, they didn't need her, not really, for her talents. Dante surpassed her at jerking rocks around, and while she was a superior shadow walker to Blaze, he could handle himself well enough. True, it never hurt to have another Nethermancer around, but she was outclassed by the members of the council who were present, and they'd brought a dozen monks besides. All that was here for her was unnecessary risk for a city she had no ties to. That was it. "You're right," he said. "You should go back with him. When this is over, I'll drop by the cove and tell you how it played out." She touched his arm. "I'd like that." As if Roe had been waiting for them to conclude, she nodded to the people of the pocket. They filed inside the tunnel. Within a couple minutes, they were gone. Dante crunched through the snow beside him. "Ready to go? Ready to fling myself at a hateful madman in possession of the world's most powerful object? Let's ride." The plan, as he understood it, was loose but sound. Move everyone to a safe, out-of-the-way spot near the borders of the Spirish Forest, then keep the body of the troops there, while a few heavy hitters snuck into Call and skulked around to figure out where Selin was. Once that was established, they'd send in a lean, stealthy strike to try to liberate it while simultaneously moving the troops close enough to respond, should the strike result in disaster. Then, with Selin in hand, they'd rush to the tunnel, close it behind them, and abscond back to Narashtovic. It remained to be seen whether actual events would resemble that plan in the slightest. The army marched across the snowfields. Human and Norren scouts moved ahead. According to their guide, Ast, They were several days from the nearest real settlements, but if a single traveller spotted them and spread the word, the whole thing would be stillborn. They didn't see a soul for the first 4 days, however, and as far as they knew, they managed to elude detection all the way to their base camp, a pine-filled valley in sight of the first Lorens towering above the lesser trees. As troops went to gather lawbills and replenish their dwindling provisions, Dante called together those bound for the infiltration of Call. Somber, C, Ast, Morn, Blaze, and a handful of scouts. They gathered under the pines, out of earshot of the others. Dante gazed between them. In one way, this will be easier than it sounds. The minister will have it on him at all times, I guarantee it.
Difficult to get to him in his compound, Somba said, but if he leaves, we'll have a real opportunity.
Is he arrogant? Blaze said. Stupid? Dante shrugged. Probably the former, definitely not the latter.
Why?
Because his people have waited 1,000 years to get their hands on Selin. Unless he's unbelievably arrogant, dumb, or some combination of the two, there's no way he leaves his little tree-top castle.
Until it's time to smash Narashtovic.
They all thought about that a moment. Dante bit his lip.
We should count on that coming sooner rather than later. His army must be close to assembled. Once it's ready, he'll be shuffling thousands of troops in. It'll be impossible for us to miss. I think the conservative approach is best. Watch carefully and wait for opportunity.
Dante passed out funny-looking clothes with loose sleeves and legs, along with cinches for the wrists and ankles. He promised they were spirish, but as Blaze dressed, he suspected it was a prank of some kind. They moved east into the forest. From a distance, the Lorens looked pretty tall, but Blaze soon found that was a trick of perspective. In fact, they were gigantic. Bizarre roots, too, like a tangle of horrifically enormous worms, holding a race to see who could get out of the ground fastest. Dante warned them that many of the trees were inhabited, some with entire towns. He'd explained this before, but now that Blaze was seeing the trees in person, he understood it on a whole new level. They marched for a couple of days, following the roads like the innocent travellers they weren't. Dante, as per his habit, had killed a couple of genuinely innocent forest mammals, sending them ahead down the path to ensure there was no sign of soldiers. Just as Blaze was beginning to wonder if they were leaving their own troops too far behind, Dante, Ast, and C stopped to confer, pointing off into the never-ending woods.
"Call's just a couple of miles from here," Dante said. "We'll find an unoccupied tree, then get to work."
They did just that, locating a Loren that was on the small side, relatively speaking, and climbing up its roots to shelter in the hollows circling its trunk. The work turned out to be everyone sitting around, while Dante ordered a dead mouse to climb piggyback on a dead squirrel, then sent the squirrel bounding into the brush.
"I think," Blaze said, after 10 minutes of near silence, "we may have brought too many people."
Dante waved a hand, distracted.
"If the only people at risk are a couple of dead animals, we should consider ourselves lucky."
He was right. Even so, it wasn't a whole lot of fun to sit around a damp tree with a bunch of smelly people while Dante gazed blankly into space. A couple hours later, Dante shifted position.
"He's there, in his palace."
"Better news than if he weren't," Blaze said. "Unless he were off in a temple, renouncing his wicked ways. What's he doing?"
"Writing. Quit bothering me."
Blaze sighed thinly. A half hour later, he got up to stroll around. Somber followed him out of the entry of the round.
"Where are you going?"
"Anywhere," Blaze said.
"Now's not the time to wander.
You realize I'm not, and haven't been for years, Narashtovic's servant?"
"I do," Somber said, "and I believe you're smart enough to know better than to jeopardize our mission because you're bored."
Blaze chuckled. "Keen one, aren't you?
I'll be good. He returned inside the round. A whole lot of nothing transpired. Just after sunset, Dante let out a breath, and his eyes lit up the way they always did when he withdrew from the mind of a dead thing and came back to the here and now. The minister's been in his chambers all day, had his food brought to him, held a couple of meetings, also in his chambers. One was about logistics, very tedious, because they've been very thorough. Nothing there for us, although it will be useful to Ollivander. Dante glanced around, rubbing the corners of his eyes. The other was a civil issue. Apparently, the citizens assigned to do all the extra lawbull gathering have grown resentful of their new responsibilities. Today, a team of them refused to work until their pay was increased. The minister ordered them to be executed, and for wages to be increased for everyone else. How is that relevant? Somba said. I'm not sure. There may be a domestic angle we can exploit. Like poisoning the lawbells, Blaze said. Dante gave him a look. We're not poisoning the lawbells. Why not? Like it's so much more righteous to kill his soldiers on the battlefield where we can die too. It's at least 10% more righteous. All right, agreed. But given the circumstances of our cause, I think everything we do is extra righteous. Blaze stood and paced, stretching his legs. Anyway, I wasn't serious. This is the minister in a nutshell, Dante said. Brutal and highly effective at getting the most from each act of that brutality. He kills the dissidents, discouraging others, then cuts the legs out beneath their resentment by raising wages. What a jerk. Sounds like we should kill him or something. If he keeps refusing to leave his palace, it's not going to be easy. What about Selen? Somba said. I didn't see it directly, Dante said, but he kept touching the front pocket of his shirt. Either he's got a rash or that's where he's keeping it. That was the end of the first day. On the second day, Blaze let himself sleep in until well after sunrise, and it was excellent. He ate some lawbell and went to pee. In the upper branches, scouts ruffled the leaves, but Morn appeared to have gone off somewhere. Back in the round, Dante was deep in one of his dead animal trances. Blaze sat near the others. As long as we're sitting around, we may as well put our heads together. Seems to me there are two general routes here. Either we go to the minister, or we do as planned and grab him up as soon as he steps into the open. Wrong, C said. There's 100 different things we could do, like tricking him into giving it up. How are we going to do that? Tell him this was all a big mistake, and what he thinks is Selen is actually the egg of a giant raven, one that is growing increasingly angry at being separated from its young. I don't know how we would, I'm just saying we could. Fair enough. And good thinking, too. It's no wonder the bossman keeps you around. Is anything off the table? Somber asked. Blaze scrunched his eyebrows together. Why would it be? Because for most people, the means can get too mean to justify the ends. Why do I feel that comment is directed at me? Vanity, I would imagine. Blaze burst out laughing. For the purpose of this discussion, nothing is off the table. I'll keep my judgment of your character to myself. Somba leaned forward. If we could somehow kill everyone in the minister's tree, you would have no objection. Let me check. Ah, yes, I do have a soul. Thus, objections, but, hypothetically speaking, how many people are in that tree? 10,000. 10,000? In one tree? It includes some 500 feet of habitable height. 9 separate lofts. Each loft includes some 4 to 12 flats. Rounds surround the entire trunk of the tree. You can see how the living space adds up. Blaze glanced to the side. Most of those who live in it are innocent, or near enough to it. Weighed against all the lives lost in a clash against Narashtovic, could you guarantee killing them would put Selen in our hands? Somba touched his index fingers together. As you say, I have been speaking hypothetically. When all that matters is the goal, many new options become clear.
Well, it's not up to me, is it? So I say we come up with anything that could work. Pass it on to Wise Leader over there, and let him decide how much his conscience can handle.
Somber smiled. Your self-awareness has been sorely missed.
Sorry about that. So, do you have a way to take them all out and get a Selen or not?
I might be able to neutralize the citizens, but it would be too chaotic to guarantee where the Black Star winds up.
Ast, quiet this whole time, raised his head.
I would say that he is a man of great ego. If I were to scheme to deceive him, I would prey on that.
Good, Blay said. How?
I don't know.
Even better, you can admit that.
He met their eyes in turn. Look, the point is, we're more limited by our own thinking than the circumstances at hand. I hope we can get a solution dropped in our laps.
Until that happens, the broader our thinking, the sooner we'll get where we want to be.
They kicked around a few more ideas, but it was mostly more what-ifs and suppose-sos. As the morning shifted to afternoon and approached the evening, Dante withdrew from his otherworldly sight to tend to his body. When he came back to the round, he shook his head.
Nothing new. He's been in his rooms all day. The only words he's spoken are to tell the servants what he'd like to eat next.
Arsenic, Blay said. Please tell me it's arsenic. Hey, why don't we poison his food?
Because he has one servant watching his preparation at all times, and another to taste it for him.
Outside, someone crunched through the leaves. C reached for her bow. Distantly, Blaze felt Dante reach for the nether. But it was just Morn. His boots were dark with damp and soil, his face streaked with dried grey mud.
I think we should move the troops closer,
he suggested, once he'd climbed up the roots.
What did you see? Dante said. Have the minister's soldiers been on the march?
Probably, given that they're soldiers and marching is what soldiers do, if only to impress their captains. But I didn't see any strategic movements.
Then why shift our people?
He shrugged his broad, Norrin shoulders.
Because they're too far away. And I found a better place for them.
A tactical discussion ensued, involving the minister's unknown scouting capacities and the ability of 200 Narashtivik soldiers to camp within his borders without being noticed. Blaze listened because, why not, but had no strong opinions either way.
We've taken a conservative stance, Dante said. There's no reason to move them up until we're closer to understanding what we need to do next.
That appears to be true, Morn said. But you know where the minister is. You know where Selen is. When you figure out how to extract the latter from the former, do you want to wait 2 days for your support to arrive, or a few hours?
Is that a trick question? Blaze said.
I walked around, because walking around is how you see new things, and I found a nice valley. Good cover. Much closer.
He swept his dark, shaggy hair from his brows.
The question is whether you trust your people to go unseen, and if they are seen, to take care of those who saw them.
Dante squeezed the bridge of his nose.
Tell me where to move them.
A bunch of directions ensued, followed by Dante mumbling into his loon. Presumably, more than 50 miles away, 200 armed men were getting to their feet and drawing closer. Blaze wasn't sure what to think. Sitting on his ass in a tree all day was not his idea of productive behavior, and until that were rectified, you might as well leave everyone else out of harm's way. But maybe bringing them closer would provoke Dante to more aggressive action. Like Morn had said, they already knew exactly where their target was. It seemed to him that, with that knowledge in hand, you ought to be able to work out the next step by producing one idea after another until you ran out of bad ones and tripped over a good one. Alas, He was no longer a brain of the operation, more like an arm, or maybe an appendix, fit to burst. As the third day dawned, to delay such an explosion, he decided to attempt to navigate Samba's maze-like mind instead. Samba suggested that, with the right type and quantity of poison, they might sprinkle it all around the minister's lauren. In time, the tree would draw up the water and soil, pass it into the laurels, and thus into the population. He admitted the plan would take weeks, if not months, to bear fruit, so to speak, but seemed more concerned about the timeline than the mortality. Eventually, Blaze wandered off into the flat to clear his head.
Oh, shit!
Dante's voice echoed from inside the round.
Oh, shit!
Blaze recognized the tone. He dashed back, bursting through the brown blankets hung over the entryway.
Are we doomed? We're doomed, aren't we?
Dante stared across the vacant space of the round. The minister's just spoken with his advisors. He suspects Lou was an Arashtovik spy. He wants to move soon, before we've got time to prepare for their invasion.
How long? Samba said.
He says that if the channel is cut through the Wodans at a low enough elevation, the snows will be no matter. His people say the armies will be ready within a week.
How many?
20,000. Or more.
Dante's face was as pale as the fibrous mat between the skin of a laurel and its sweet pulp.
How can they have so many?
Samba bared his teeth.
Irrelevant. All that matters is it's too many.
So, Dante looked to Blaze. He still hasn't left his chambers. But once the troops arrive, he intends to go out and see them. That may be our only chance to strike him before he opens the mountains.
Blaze didn't know why it was his job to respond to this, but he couldn't stop himself.
When his entire army is watching.
Maybe we can hit him while he's coming down the stairs.
Like I said, army.
We'll have soldiers of our own.
C laughed bitterly.
And they'll have a hell of a time staying hidden when, a few days from now, 20,000 members of our sworn enemy turn the forest into one big campground. How are we going to get through them?
I don't know.
Dante lurched to his feet. But unless you've got a better idea, this is our best shot. Do I need to remind you that we don't need to survive to achieve our goal? All we need to do is get our hands on Selin long enough to use it. As soon as it's gone, Narashtovik is safe for another 1,000 years.
Everyone fell quiet for a bit, which was distressing because it gave Blaze too much time to agree with himself that it was time to speak up.
So I may have forgotten to mention this, but did I ever tell you I can walk through walls?
Dante swung his head around so hard it was a wonder if it didn't fly off his neck.
What are you jabbering about?
I mean that, if you had the right kind of wall in front of me, I could walk through it, as if it weren't there.
Are you being serious? Is this something you learned from Min? And what do you mean, the right kind of wall?
I can walk through stone. I don't think I can walk through wood. Don't know why. Except maybe that trees are stubborn.
Blaze patted the wall of the round.
Present company excluded. Faithful home tree.
Parts of the palace are stone. It's one of the only buildings in Coral that uses it.
That's a good bit of irony. The minister walls himself behind the strongest material he can, and it's the one thing that can't keep me out.
So how do you get to the palace?
C said. Dante twisted his sideburn. The same way we got to the Deepstone.
An incident that may have tipped them to our methods,
Somber said.
You have eyes on the loft. Does security look any different?
He's got more troops around. Very few people are being allowed into the palace.
Questions to answer. Does he sleep alone? Do his bodyguards check on him at night? If so, how often? Assume Blaze can get the item outside, but that they will be alerted that something has gone wrong. If they shut down the Lauren staircase, how do we get down?
Dante rubbed his palms together.
Are we doing this?
Answering those questions will clarify our course.
What he said, Blaze said.
I gotta say, whatever those answers turn out to be, I like this idea a whole lot more than trying to wrestle Selen away from him while he's on his way to review his endless hordes of warriors.
Dante nodded. I'll tell the men to head to the New Valley and be ready to move here at a moment's notice. I'd better let Nak know what they'll be up against if we bungle this.
He gave Blaze one of his looks. Then we'll see about getting you into the palace.
That meant more sitting for Blaze, but he did so with considerably more patience and satisfaction than he had during the last couple days. After a few minutes, it occurred to him that he'd only walked through rock once, and given that it didn't sound like anything was going to go down until tomorrow night at the soonest, he'd better go and make sure his ability was something he could repeat. Morn had scouted the lay of the land, so Blaze had led him the way to a suitable practice ground, a tall, tapering spur of rock just a couple of feet wide at its end. Blaze accumulated a few bruises with his initial efforts, but as soon as he settled down, remembered that he'd done this before, and convinced himself he would do it again, he did. He reappeared on the other side of the spur with a grin big enough to swallow himself. That probably didn't look too impressive, what with me being invisible. He reached out and knocked on the rock. But I just walked straight through this thing.
Morn stared at it. I wonder how it feels about that.
Blaze practiced until his control began to waver. He returned to the tree, pleased with himself, confident that, whatever else happened, he'd be able to uphold his end of the plan. It was a quiet day. Dante drew a fastidious map of the palace, charting entrances, rooms, and which parts of the building were made out of stone. Right here. He tapped the sketch's outer wall, drawn with a solid dark line that meant it was rock, then used his finger to follow a path up two flights of stairs to the middle of the third floor. A block of rooms in the center was bordered with the same solid lines. These are his quarters. This is his bedroom. You'll have to go through its door like a normal person, and that's it. The rest of the time you can walk around as a ghost. You're sure he keeps it on him? Blaze said. Bear in mind, and I know this is a tricky one, but I'm not you. I can only shadow walk for 10 or 12 minutes before I tire out.
I can't shadow walk at all. I was hoping you might teach me someday.
Wouldn't that be something? Specifically, it would be something for a much later date, when the fate of everything doesn't hang in the balance.
Dante stood up from the maps.
I'm sure he keeps it on him. I'll keep watching him, though. We've still got much to learn. Dante immediately went to sleep, resting up before he spent the night observing the minister's sleep routine. Blaze and Somba went outside to chat about how to get to the palace loft and back down to the ground. Somba's simple disguises sounded feasible, if prone to disruptions from other soldiers. Somba spent the rest of the day drilling Blaze in Wesleyan, trying to teach him enough to get by if, for some reason, he were directly questioned as they headed up or down the stairs. This was highly annoying work, but at least it passed the time. When Blaze went to bed, Dante was back up, staring into space. Blaze woke a few times that night, but it didn't look as if Dante had moved an inch. By morning, his eyes were puffy, and though neither of them was the model of hygiene at the moment, Dante's hair looked flatter and greasier than ever.
He sleeps with it, keeps it in a bag in his pocket, and literally keeps it under his pillow at night.
Blaze shrugged. Better that than us having no idea where it is.
We caught another break, too. His bodyguards stay outside his quarters all night.
After all, there's only one way in, and the walls are solid stone. What would they need to check in on?
Somber slitted his eyes. Sound like you ought to shadow walk in, slash his throat, and then shadow walk out. If we move in the middle of the night, it'll be hours before anyone's aware.
That would be my recommendation, Dante said. Also, they're using passwords on the drawbridges, the 3-part one, and the one up to the minister's flat. I've already spied them out.
They'll change them nightly. You'll want to listen tonight, too.
I will. But now,
I need to sleep. While Dante snoozed, Blaze went over the language some more. It seemed kind of pointless, given that he couldn't understand it well enough to know what he was being asked. But then Somba showed him a set of gestures Somba would use to let him know how to reply. Yes, no, his name, etc. Dante got up earlier that afternoon, conversed with Knack for a while, then sent the scouts to keep tabs on the path between them and their troops, who would start marching toward the capital at dusk. If Dante were coordinating everything right, and it didn't hit any snags, Narashtovic's troops would arrive at the advance team's Lauren at the same time Dante, Blaze, and Somba were infiltrating the city. The day waned. Dante gave the orders. Blaze couldn't see any of it, of course, but 20 miles away, a few hundred heavily armed and well-trained troopers set out at high speed. As Dante continued to watch through the eyes of his furry little minions, Somba, Ast, and C briefed Blaze on what call was like. This was probably extraneous, but on the chance they got separated and Blaze had to make his way down to the ground alone, it would be eminently useful. He'd seen a number of tree villages on their way through Spiron, but it was hard to imagine one as dense as Call. "You were right about the password, Somba," Dante muttered after sundown. "But I've got the new one." The minutes trickled by. The troops reported in with their progress. They'd advanced 8 miles so far and estimated they'd arrive by midnight, right on schedule. Blaze would have liked to get out and walk about, burn off some of the energy threatening to drive him wild, but now wasn't the time. And yet, much as had been the case when they'd begun their trek into the mountains, he didn't feel as nervous as he thought the situation called for. Stars fought for air with the canopy, but were soon overwhelmed by a solid sheet of clouds piling up from the east. Rain spit through the leaves in scattered drops. "Ready?" Dante said. Blaze looked up. Was it midnight already? "Would it matter if I said no?" "Of course it would. You're the keystone of the bridge." "Then, if I'm wobbly, best to dash across as fast as you can." He descended to the forest floor with Dante and Somba. The rain had thickened, hissing on the treetops. He was glad. Rain gave them every excuse to keep their hoods up. Within a few minutes he could see the lights shining from the branches of the Laurens, constellations of life brought down to earth. Smoke hung in the damp air. Before they got too close, Somba stopped and closed his eyes. He and Dante became different people. Blaze's sleeves and even his hands changed shape. "Well, that's distressing," he said. "From here on out, no more Gascon," Dante said. "We're Spirish soldiers. We're cold and wet, and we just want to get back inside." "That part won't be hard to fake. Pretend I said that in Wesleyan." Dante glared at him, then moved on. More lights sprung from the branches, but besides the sough of rain, the woods were disturbingly quiet. They came to a set of roots webbed with housing and headed up the stairs. The smell of dung and hot lorbel oil wafted from below. The stairs curled around the trunk, flats stretched to all sides supporting shacks and tents. About 80 feet up, they came to a gap in the stairs. Dante exchanged a few words with the guard there, and a crossing was lowered into place. Blaze kept his eyes forward. They moved on. Higher up, the quality of the housing improved. Voices babbled from public houses, disembodied in the thick, damp air. They were allowed through another crossing, then a third. Blaze was glad he couldn't see the ground. Even though the stairs were clearly the great road of the tree, there were few people on them. Most of the citizens were being kept home by the hour and the rain. A long, long ways up, they walked out on a flat and followed it all the way to another tree. The staircase there sported at least double the guards. They looked soaked and miserable, and none of them said a word until Dante got to a convoluted trio of retractable platforms. A man in a dark beard grunted something. Dante mumbled back the password. The man turned and gestured, and stairs cranked into place. It felt more than a little crazy that they were doing this, actually walking into the home of their greatest enemy without being scrutinized by more than a few words from the occasional soldier. Then again, it was more than a little crazy that Sombra had them wearing illusory disguises, that Dante had stolen the password with the help of an all-seeing dead squirrel, and that, for an encore, Blaze was about to pop out of sight and walk through the walls of the heart of the capital. He had to bite the inside of his cheek to stop from giggling. Above, the boughs grew dense with structures. Dante met his eyes and nodded. They came to another checkpoint. Dante gave a different password. A tall soldier with deep-set eyes came forth to inspect them. He said something Blaze couldn't understand, but his tone was clear enough. Dante replied, but the man went on staring. To Blaze's right, Sombra scratched the corner of his left eye. Blaze said, "Yes," in Wesleyan. The soldier nodded, said something else to Dante, then stepped aside. They stepped out onto a flat thick with buildings. Most were dark, shuttered against the storm. All but a few were walled with wood. Blaze had never laid eyes on the minister's home, but it wasn't hard to guess which it was. They moved past the palace. Sombra gestured them into the shadow of a long, narrow building stretched along the edge of the flat. "We're on the west side of the structure. Do you recognize it?" Blaze reoriented himself versus the map he'd memorized. "Got it." "We'll be right here," Dante murmured. "Do your thing and be quick about it. It's freezing out here." Blaze grinned and vanished. Inside the nether, each drop of rain shined with its own inner gleam. He felt the shadows shifting behind him, a somber darkened the air around himself and Dante. Blaze walked lightly across the open space between the storage block and the palace, undisturbed by the motion of two soldiers off to his right. Blaze approached the palace wall and passed straight through it. He found himself in a room cramped with books. A mobile ladder leaned against the shelves. This wasn't the room he'd meant to enter. Dante's map was so small that, although Blaze had come in exactly where he'd meant to, just to the right of the two windows, he'd wound up in the adjoining room instead. But both fed into the same hallway. He jogged into it, feet all but weightless on the floor, and followed it to the staircase. At the upper landing, a man stood in the darkness, alone and motionless. Blaze's hair prickled. Pure instinct, of course. He was invisible. He smiled at the man and walked right past without drawing so much as a flinch. The stairs fed him out a different direction than he'd come in, and Blaze took a moment to adjust his internal compass. He'd only been inside for a minute and could afford the time to eliminate potential mistakes. Once he thought he knew where he was, he walked briskly down the hall and through a series of foyers. Ahead, two soldiers stood in front of a closed, iron-banded door. Blaze moved to their right, resisting the urge to tap one on the shoulder, and dissolved through the smooth stone wall. Candles fluttered from mantels and desks. The room was cluttered with books, figurines, scrolls, metal cups and bone carvings. Lodged in the nether, Blaze would have to bang directly into any of it to knock it down. But he moved with care through the tight, makeshift walkways between the bric-a-brac. Neither seeing nor hearing the minister, he headed down a short hall, emerged from the nether to make sure his senses were accurate, and pressed his ear against the bedroom door. Beneath the distant drumming of the rain, he heard steady breathing. Blaze tried the handle and found it unlocked. He snapped back into the nether. Silver glowed beneath the blankets of the sprawling bed. He could feel something else, too, a denseness he'd known before. Selen. He moved beside the bed to confirm the man in it was the minister. Dante and Somba had spent a lot of time harping on the intensity of his eyes, but those were now closed. Black hair, sharp features. Anyway, it had to be him. No one would be crazy enough to employ a body double, then let that double sleep on top of the Black Star. Blaze now faced the dilemma he'd been stuck on for days. Kill the minister, or rob him and leave him be. The equation held both a practical consideration and a moral one. On the practical side, killing him would ensure his silence during the theft. But it wasn't easy to kill someone in perfect silence. Even if Blaze cut the minister's head off in one swipe, and he couldn't, not with him lying in bed, the stroke of the sword would be on the crunchy side. The head might roll around. The body might thrash. Say Blaze got blood all over himself, would it become visible as soon as it left his person? For example, on his tracks? He thought it might. On the moral side, it sounded like the guy was an asshole's asshole, but it was never fun to kill a person in their bed. Blaze wished very deeply that he could stop killing altogether, leave that for the assholes like the minister. But he knew the only reason he was having his internal debate was because he was trying to talk himself into it. The minister had to die. There was no way around it. His departure from the world would make that world better. His people's lives stood to be substantially less shitty if they wound up with a non-maniac for a leader. Just maybe they'd move on from this "Narashtovic is the root of all our problems" nonsense, and deal with their actual issues. Anyway, you didn't have to lop off a man's head to get him to quit existing. The heart worked just as well, and with a lot less mess. Still, in the world of Quicksilver, Blaze drew his knife and leaned over the minister. Gently as the morning dew, he drew away the blanket. The minister slept in dark underclothes. He was on his left side, right arm across his chest, but the pathway to his heart was clear. Blaze hovered above him, moving the point closer, then drove it home. The minister surged upright, screaming. Blaze jerked back, losing hold of the knife. The blade's handle twitched in time with the man's heart. The minister had shifted at the last instant, turning an immediately lethal strike into one that might take minutes to kill him. Blaze would finish that in a second. Still hidden in the nether, he moved to the head of the bed and snatched the bag beneath the pillow. It was as small as a coin purse, but felt as heavy as a keg. The minister vaulted to the floor, knife still embedded in his ribs. White light flared across the room. Shadows drew on his hands in great flocks. Blaze's heart roared in his ears. He should have known. The minister's eyes cast about, burning with rage, then seemed to lock on Blaze. Blaze turned and fled out the open door. He bashed into a table, spilling a crystal pitcher to the tiled floor. It crashed and burst in a boom of shards. The minister followed him out. So did a wave of shadows as powerful as the swells of a storm-whipped sea. Blaze ran through the outer wall of the minister's chambers. A moment later, the door banged open. "We're under attack," the minister shouted. "Everyone to decks! Shoot strangers on sight!" Men hollered orders across the palace. Lanterns flared, boots thumped. Blaze barreled down the stairs. A gang of soldiers headed up them, and he turned his shoulder and pressed himself flat to the wall. As soon as they passed, he tore down to the ground floor and sprinted through the halls. He tripped on the churned corner of a rug and sprawled on the ground, but the contact was so light it barely stung. He glanced over his shoulder. No sign of the minister. He got up and ran for the library. Past its windows, lanterns painted the platform with light. As Blaze neared the library's outer wall, a dark shape moved over him. He stepped through the wall and seemed to step out of the shadows, too. They withdrew from him with the suction of a receding wave, pulled away by the enemy behind him. With no more nether to walk in, Blaze popped back into the physical world. He faltered. Mechanical bows.